Anyway, so let's get started. We are beginning a whole new experience. Many of you have been studying with me through the Torah portions, and we spent a year doing that, and that was really fun. I enjoyed it. And now we're doing something else. It's very different when you're doing the Torah portions. It's not like deciding we're going to study the book of Genesis, even though we promoted it that way each time, its own book. But essentially, we limited ourselves to only discussing the Torah portion on the given week. So basically, what I did is I chose a topic, a few verses, a chapter, some notion or theme that I found in the Torah portion, and I discussed it and limited to half an hour, and that's it. Now we're really focusing on the book, and I purposely initially just advertised a certain number of dates, and we will continue to advertise more dates as we move along. But I don't want to limit myself to a certain number. I have no idea. I'll tell you right now. I have no idea how long it's going to take to go through the book of Joshua. I want to just really go through it. And we will, of course, limit ourselves to the half an hour. Oh, you like that, Judy. Good. We will limit ourselves to the half an hour each time, but we will be continuing. And so if we get into conversation or I end up delving longer into a particular part of the book, you know, we'll just continue it next week. And so that is a very different experience and one of the things that I'm really looking forward to. Okay, so let's start with the book of Joshua. Today we're only doing an introduction. We're going to be doing a lot of different verses, but very few verses in the book of Joshua itself. Let me, however, just read the first couple of verses of Joshua, okay? Actually, now I'm going to just read the first verse. Just the first verse. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' servant. That is the beginning of Joshua. And it says here, after the death of Moses, I would prefer saying, and it came to pass after the death of Moses, or it happened, or this is, you know, this is the time. The Hebrew word is vayhi. It was, okay? So it's not just after the death of Moses. This is saying, this is the story we are about to tell. And the story starts with right after the death of Moses. Now, let's take a look at two very, very important words here. We have two figures that are introduced to us in the very first word, Moses and Joshua. Moses is described as a servant of the Lord. Joshua is described as a servant or server, or I don't know, there are two different words. Eved is a servant. Misharet is someone who serves. In English, it's the same, but it's a little bit different because an Eved is a status. It is your entity, is your essence. Whereas a Misharet is something you do. Okay, Joshua is someone who served Moses, but it's very proper, an assistant. It could be, it's not just an assistant. It is someone who serves. It's someone who was there there for Moses at his beck and call at all times. Okay, that is the idea of a Misharet. Okay, so we have Moses who served God, and we have Joshua who served Moses. And here, of course, we're going to have already in verse 2, where God is going to say, you know, okay, Joshua, Moses is dead, you're it. And he's going to give him words of encouragement. And we're not going to do much in this chapter today, but that's, you know, what's going on. And if we look at verse 6, this is very important. The first two words, chazak ve'amatz in Hebrew, be strong and courageous. Okay. And those words will be repeated several times in verse 6, be strong and courageous. In verse 7, only be strong and courageous. And in verse 9, how I have commanded you, be strong and courageous. So these very specific words are mentioned three different times in these these first few verses. So keeping that in mind, what I would like to do now, and what we will do this in the rest of the class today and possibly into the next one, I don't know. But what I'd like to do today is, before we actually start the book of Joshua, what do we know about Joshua from the Bible, from the Torah, from, you know, the first, oh, Kim, you're here. The real Kim Troop. Okay. What do we know about Joshua from before? Okay. And so what I'm going to do now is go through the various scriptures where Joshua is mentioned before. And what we're going to try to do is build a character description. What do we know about Joshua? What are some of the characteristics that we see in him, and how he functioned between while he was serving Moses, so to speak, up until today when he takes over? Okay. And if you realize, if just look at the very first words of Joshua, as I said, it came to be after the death of Moses. Now look at the very, very end of Deuteronomy. What do we have at the very end of Deuteronomy? The death of Moses. We have in chapter 34, verse 5, and Moses, the servant of the Lord. Again, the same description of Moses that we have in Joshua is here. Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there. And then we continue in verse 8, and the children of Israel mourned Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. And when the time of mourning for Moses ended, and Joshua, the son of Nun, who was filled with the spirit of wisdom, because Moses placed his hands upon him, and the children of Israel listened to him and did as God commanded to Moses. Okay. And so we have at the end of Deuteronomy, the death of Moses and the succession of Joshua. And that is exactly how Joshua begins, after the death of Moses and the succession of Joshua. So really, it's like almost the next chapter in the same book. It is a separate book, but it is a direct continuation. So rather than just see the continuation from the end of chapter 32 and 34 in Deuteronomy and chapter 1 in Joshua, let's take a look, as I said, at what we know about Joshua from way before. Okay? Before we do that, let's pay attention to the verses that I read to you from the beginning of Joshua. We talked about the mourning period. Verses 8. Okay, we see, what does it say? Yeah, I read this to you, where Joshua has a spirit of God, because Moses laid his hands upon him. Okay, and that's in the beginning of Joshua, and we read that already. Okay, so now let's go on and see what it is that we know about Joshua. Let's start in Exodus. The first place we meet Joshua is Exodus 17. Now, if you haven't studied with me before, I'm warning you, we do a lot of jumping. We go all over the place, finding relevant verses from different scriptures. And so that's part of the study. So get ready. If you don't want to actually check all the verses yourself, that's perfectly fine. But this is what we're going to do certainly today. Okay. Exodus chapter 17, starting in verse 9, we here have... I'm in the wrong place. Here we go. Verse 9, we are after the children of Israel have come out of Egypt, after the parting of the Red Sea, the first thing that happens to them, Amalek comes and attacks them. And Joshua is the general. Okay, verse 9, Moses said to Joshua, pick some men for us and go out and do battle with Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. And we have the continuation of the story where essentially Joshua is down below and he is the general leading the nation in actual natural physical battle with the Amalekites. Okay. And at the same time, Moses is up on a hill raising his hands. He has Hur and Aaron helping him hold his hands up. And the hands of Moses affect the outcome of the battle. When Moses succeeds in keeping his hands up, the battle goes well. If Moses' hand weakens and he starts to bring his hands down, then the tide of the battle turns in favor of Amalek. And so you have here not only the first time we meet Joshua, but we see a very interesting relationship between Joshua and Moses. Moses is in charge of the miracles. Joshua is in charge of the on-the-ground battles. Very interesting connection, not only between master and pupil, or, you know, whatever, Moses and his servant or whatever, but we have Moses taking the spiritual lead and at the same time relying on Joshua, who's taking the natural lead. This is going to end up being very relevant to how we see Joshua in the book of Joshua and how he develops. Now, in verse 14, we see something very interesting. Then the Lord said to Moses, inscribe this in a document as a reminder and read it aloud to Joshua. And literally it says, and put it in the ears of Joshua. Okay, I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Why does Moses need to put this in the ears of Joshua? We have just met this man for the first time, and all we know about him is that he's a general. So why is it that this importance of keeping the memory of this very important victory against Amalek, why is that being given to Joshua? So here you can say, and some of the commentaries say, that we see that essentially Joshua was already appointed, or God had already seen him as the heir of Moses. How and when and under what circumstances that was going to happen, that we don't know yet. But we see that even here at the very beginning, before we know anything about Joshua, before he's really done anything, they've just left Egypt, Joshua is already marked as the person who is going to inherit the leadership mantle from Moses. Okay, next time we meet Joshua is in chapter 24. Okay, chapter 24, Moses is going up to Mount Sinai. He's about to receive the Ten Commandments. And we have here chapter 24, verse 13. We have here basically Moses is going up, and there's the elders who are going up. Aaron is going up. Aaron's sons are going up. And Joshua is going up. What do we see? Look in verse 12. God says to Moses, come up to me on the mountain, wait there, and I will give you the stone tablets with the teachings and commandments which I have inscribed to instruct them. So Moses and his servant, it's the same word again, Misharet. Here it actually says attendant. Don't like that word so much. Server. Why don't we just say server? Servant is, you know, Moses is the servant of God, and Joshua is the server of Moses. Kind of makes sense to me. Anyway, so Moses got up and his servant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of the Lord. And to the elders, he said, wait here for us until we return to you. Have Aaron and Hur with you. Let anyone who has a legal matter approach them. So what you can see is that there's a certain hierarchy here. The elders and Aaron stay down below. They're separated from the rest of the Israelites because they're at the foot of the mountain. They're not in the camp, okay? They're at the foot of the mountain. Joshua seems to go more up the mountain than the rest of them, but then at some point, Moses goes up by himself. We see that at the end of verse 13, Moses goes up to himself, okay? And we can see that more clearly in chapter 32. We're still in Exodus chapter 32, verse 17. This is already after the situation of the golden calf. Moses has already been told by God there's this golden calf thing going on, and he's on his way down the mountain. Verse 17, when Joshua heard the sound of the people in their wildness, he said to Moses, there's a cry of war in the camp. Okay, so clearly Joshua is not down below. He has no clue what's going on. He doesn't know, but unlike Aaron, who is at the foot of the mountain, and the nation goes to Aaron and says, come you know, come with us. We're doing this golden calf. Joshua's not there. He's further up the mountain. So he really doesn't know what's going on with the nation. But unlike Moses, who's at the top of Mount Sinai, he's still hearing something. So what we can see is Joshua is at a different level. He's not all the way up with Moses, but he's a different level above the elders and Aaron and all these other people who come close to Mount Sinai. Joshua is midway up Mount Sinai. So he's already in a different situation. In Exodus 33, verse 11, this is after all of this has happened, after the golden calf. In verse 7, Moses takes the tent and separates himself from the camp. And there we have some kind of a description of how holy Moses is and how the people approach him, etc. And in that context, verse 11 says as follows: "The Lord would speak to Moses face to face, as one man speaks to another, and he would then return to the camp. But his server, Joshua, son of Nun, a youth, would not stir out of the tent." Here you have this image of Joshua, who is with his master Moses at all times. He will not stir from the tent. But every single time that Moses is there, there's Joshua. He is with him. He does not leave his side. He is always in the tent. Now, very interesting. Here we have, again, a certain kind of contrast. We'll see it later on at the very end of Deuteronomy that we had looked at before, how God speaks to Moses face to face. This is where that issue was first mentioned. Okay. And at the end of his life, we have on the one hand, God speaking to Moses face to face. And on the other hand, we have the immediate contrast with turning over the leadership to Joshua. Here too, we have God speaking to Moses face to face. And the server, Joshua, he's not at that level. He's not speaking to God face to face, but he is there with Moses at all times. Okay. Next reference is in Numbers chapter 11. And this is a story, begins in verse 24. This is a story where Moses is going to be gathering 70 elders. And he is going to be kind of endowing them with a part of his spirit so that they too will prophesy. And he gathers these 70 people to him. And then someone comes along and says, "Now, wait a second. There are two people who stayed in the camp and they have started to prophesy." Basically, what is being presented here is a possible threat to Moses' authority. Because Moses is selecting 70 people. He's selecting 70 people to have this new status, a higher spiritual status of prophecy. And two people who were not part of that selection, who are not part of the 70 that are going to Moses, then start prophesying in the camp. And so you have a young boy, a young boy, who suddenly runs to Moses and says, "These two people, their names are Eldad and Medad, they're prophesying in the camp." And he sees it as an enormous threat to Moses' authority. "What do you mean? You weren't selected. You weren't part of the 70. You have no right to be prophesying in the camp." And we have two responses to that incident. We have Joshua's response and we have Moses' response. Joshua immediately responds. You may even see he rashly responds. And immediately he says he's referred to as the server of Moses. And he says to him, "Lock him up, put him in jail." Very, very, you know, here he is, picture him. He's the young man, 100% devoted to his master. He identifies a threat to his master, and all he wants to do is get rid of that threat. He doesn't care about anything else. He is just one direct, you know, one focus, one issue in focus. But Moses says something else, and Moses says something beautiful. He says, "Are you jealous on my account? I wish that all of the Lord's people would be prophets, and that the Lord would put his spirit upon everyone. That's Moses. Moses has no ego. Moses is not looking for power. Moses is looking to help the nation get closer to God. But here he teaches an important lesson. We see something about Joshua. In this place, Joshua is young. Okay, we are still in this part of Numbers. We're in year two after the Exodus from Egypt. So he's still a very young man. He's only going to take over 40 years later. He's a much younger man here. He's rash. He's you know, focused, and he's focused on ensuring that his leader is not threatened in any way. But Moses is relaxed. He has the wisdom of age. Of course, he's Moses. And he says, no, Joshua, you relax. Our purpose here is not to become autocratic leaders and gain this, you know, gather as much power around us as possible and worry about our threats to our power. Our purpose here is to bring everybody close to God. And I think this becomes a very, very well-learned lesson, because of Joshua we meet in the book of Joshua doesn't care how many people are going to be connected to God. He's going to care if there are people not connected to God. Next time that we hear about Joshua is in chapter 13, and this is the whole story of sending the spies, and we know that Joshua is one of the spies. Now, interestingly enough, in verse 8, Joshua is mentioned under a different name, Hosea, okay? Hosea, I guess, in English. It's a different name. It actually, in Hebrew, there's only one letter's difference that separates Joshua from Hosea. You don't feel it in English, but let me say it in Hebrew. In Hebrew, Joshua is Yehoshua, or Yehoshea, okay? And in Hebrew, Hosea is Hosea. So it's just the Yeh, which is represented by the J in Joshua. That is really the only difference. But it's a different name. And up until now, we see Joshua with his name Joshua. Suddenly we have him listed as Hosea. And then in verse 16, we learn that Moses changes his name from Hosea to Joshua. And that's a little bit strange. If he just changed his name to Joshua now, why have we, you know, been referring to him until now as Joshua? And there's different, you know, interpretations. It could be he used both names. It could be he was really only called Hosea, but for sake of continuity and understanding, you know, except for in this one place where we learn about the change of name, we're going to still call him Joshua throughout. But that's not what's important. The important here is the fact that Moses changes his name. Now, it is unusual because there's just a list of all the 12 spies that go from one from each tribe, and it is only Joshua that is singled out for this change of name. So again, you get this sense that Joshua is somebody that we need to pay attention to. In verse 16, I said that. Okay. Now, Numbers chapter 14, of course, after the spies come back, we know that there are only two spies that remain loyal to God's plan and God's word and God's destiny for the Jewish people to enter the land of Israel, Joshua and Caleb. Now, interestingly enough, if you read the entire story in chapter 14, and it continues on the whole story in chapter 14, you will see that it is not Joshua who takes the lead here. It is Caleb. It is Caleb that first stands out and stops them and says, no, you know, when the whole nation is starting to go crazy, oh my gosh, you know, we're not going, it's terrible. It is Caleb who stands up against everybody else and makes this statement. Later on, Joshua joins Caleb and makes it very clear that he and Caleb together are separating themselves from the other 10 spies, and they are defending the land and defending God's plan to bring them into the land. And at the very end of the story, we have God saying that both Caleb and Joshua will survive the 40 years, and they will go into the land unlike the rest of the generation, and including the other 10 spies. But even here, there's a bit of a difference, because God says about Caleb, he had a different spirit. And he talks about that, singling out Caleb, not Joshua. So I think it's very interesting because as much as there's no question, Joshua is equally as committed to God's word here as Caleb. If you're looking for independent leadership, it is Caleb who has the initiative, Caleb who stands out. And perhaps what we're seeing here is something about Joshua that is consistent with what we see about him as the server of Moses, the one who is totally identified with Moses. He's defending him. Joshua, at this point in his life, is not an independent leader. He is in the shadow of Moses. He sees himself as having no other purpose than to follow Moses and to help Moses, of course, in the service of God. And it's very interesting because what we will see in the book of Joshua is somehow Joshua has to move from that server of Moses to a leader in his own right. And it's not so simple. And perhaps when we see at the beginning of the book of Joshua, I pointed out there were three different times within just a few verses that God says to Joshua, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous. As soon as you say, hear somebody say to someone, now don't be afraid, be brave, that's the best indication that that person is afraid. He needs to be brave and he's really not there yet. Okay, if God didn't see that he needed that encouragement, he wouldn't bother have said it. He said it three different times. Okay, so I think that that is an indication to us of what we're seeing here. Joshua is used to being in the shadows. Yes, as a military leader, he did lead the nation in battle, but even so, Moses is up there with his hands in the air. But all the other times we've seen Joshua, we've seen him as the server of Moses in the shadow of Moses, and we see Caleb far overshadowing Joshua in this situation here with the spies. And so there's going to have to be a real transition where Joshua is going to have to learn to stand in his own shoes. Now, we'll have to finish up soon. So let me just finish with this one further thought. In Numbers 27, verses 18 to 22, here we have for the first time, the actual appointment of Joshua as Moses' heir. And it starts out with Moses asking God, look, I'm not going into the land. You got to appoint someone who's going to be my replacement, who will be a faithful leader and who will lead them in battle and do everything that has to be done. And God says to Moses at that point in verse 18, take for you Joshua, the son of Nun, a man who has a spirit in him, which, by the way, this complements before. Earlier in Numbers, we learned about Caleb, who had that spirit. We didn't hear about it with Joshua, but here at the point where God is saying to Moses, appoint Joshua, he has a spirit in him. And he says, and you shall lay hands upon him. Now, this idea of laying hands upon in Hebrew, it's called smicha. Actually, we use the very same word in Hebrew when we talk about ordaining a rabbi. Okay, because we believe that when a rabbi today is ordained, he is following in that chain of ordination that began with Moses, who put his hands on Joshua. And that continues the same traditions, the same exact word. So laying hands just doesn't mean, you know, resting your hand and say, okay, buddy, you know, have a good time. It means something very specific. I'm going to ordain you for this new leadership position. And it says here in verse 20, and you shall give him from your glory or from your authority, okay? In Hebrew, mehodecha. It doesn't say give him your authority or give him your glory. It says give him from your glory, okay? And commentators, and I'm actually going back now to the Talmud, which is one of the oldest records we have of commentaries on the Bible. And here the Talmud says, what exactly is going on here? Joshua will never have the same level of spirituality, authority, whatever that Moses had. He's only giving him some of his authority. And what they say there is it's a very famous concept that Moses can be compared to the sun and Joshua can be compared to the moon. Okay. And clearly the sun is more powerful light than the moon. Okay. Now, if you want, I'd like to end with this, but I'd like to end with a bit of discussion for those of you who have time. Unmute yourselves. I'd like to hear from you. When you think of Moses as the sun and Joshua as the moon, what do you think it's trying? What do you think the meaning is? What's the message here? Yes, Judy.
That the moon reflects the light of the sun. So he follows in his footsteps, learns from Moses.
Excellent. In other words, the moon does not have light of its own. The only source of light of the moon comes from the sun. And so it's an expression of the fact that everything Joshua had, he received from Moses. He's a continuation of Moses. Okay, what else? Any other ideas when we talk about these two? The relationship of Moses and Joshua, sun and moon. Any other thoughts?
This is Gloria. I have something. I don't know if I'm right or not, but one thing about the sun, the moon reflecting light of the sun, is that it doesn't diminish the light of the sun.
Yeah.
So when
that's great. I like that. That is.
Yeah. So when when Moses put his hand on Joshua, it didn't diminish his light at all.
Right. That's very good. Very nice. Uh-huh. Very nice. Any other ideas? Don't be shy. Yes, Diane?
I'm sorry. I really disagree with the analogy because the moon has no light in itself, but only what it reflects. But the sun has enough power that you can take some of that power that is in the sun and put it upon someone else. Or I think it's because my translation says in verse 20, and thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him.
Right.
So the Lord was not taking everything that he had given Moses, taking some of it.
Right.
And as you were saying, it's a lesser anointing that Joshua has, and in no way does it challenge anything that God gave Moses, but it's the same power, but a lesser amount
I think that's part of it. I think everybody, I think when we see these kind of analogies, they are meant to be rich with layers of meaning. And I think every one of the meanings that you have suggested are good ones.
Pauline. I just wonder when we said that Moses was given the sort of spiritual authority, and is that the greater authority? Without the spiritual authority, the sort of outworking of the leading, practical leading, wouldn't be the same. It had to come from the spiritual authority. So therefore, the spiritual authority, if you like, leads the fighting or the leading on the ground, as it were.
No, there's no question. I agree with you. And I think what's happening is, whereas initially when we first meet Joshua, he's just the general or whatever, total spiritual authority coming from Moses. Now mm-hmm. that Joshua inherits Moses, he himself has to be a source of spiritual authority. And so this is what has happened now. And the sun and the moon is a reflection of what kind of spiritual authority has been endowed upon Joshua in comparison with Moses. Now, there's one more interpretation that I've seen of this that I think is very interesting and also helps us to understand another aspect of this story. The sun and the moon can be in the sky at the same time, okay? In fact, it is physically, okay? It is, but so long as the sun is shining, you will not see the moon.
Yeah.
The moon only is radiant when the sun has gone down. Okay. Now, I'm sure if we were to explain this scientifically, everything I said is wrong. But you know, in the way we see it and perceive it, that's how it is. And this interpretation says something else. Okay. One of the questions that has been asked, you know, there's great, people are very troubled. We're all very troubled at the fact that Moses was punished for what seemed to be such a small transgression you know, the whole issue of, you know, the bringing forth the water from the rock. Discuss this, you know, and it's a troubling thing. What is it that Moses did so terribly? Did he really sin? You know, and one of the answers, it wasn't so much that he sinned, but that God determined that Moses's kind of leadership, which is so dependent on miracles, was so intensely connected God with Moses, is not the appropriate leadership for what will become a very practical reality as the nation enters their own land and sets up government and institutions and all that. Moses is too powerful. Moses is like a spiritual volcano. Okay, he's too much for the kind of reality that the nation of Israel is going to face when they come into the land of Israel. And so one of the questions is that, okay, I understand Moses cannot be the leader. We need a more practical leader. That's Joshua. But why couldn't Moses come in? Not as a leader. He could retire. And what this interpretation is saying, Moses could never retire. No. Because so long as Moses is around, no one else would be seen. No one else would shine. And this is, you know, what we also sing about Moses and Joshua. Joshua could only come into his own if Moses was away, if Moses was no longer.
Interesting.
And that also gives us an understanding of the different type of leadership and the different type of existence that the nation of Israel is going to be transitioning into once they cross into the land of Israel, which, of course, becomes the subject of the book of Joshua. So I went over time. I apologize. That's all for today. If anyone else has questions or comments, of course, I'm able to stay and continue. But that's, you know, that's what we've done for today. And of course, we will be continuing with this next week.
Sondra, can I ask, is a smicha with a samech or a sin?
Is which one?
Smicha, that to ordain.
Smicha is a samach.
Samach, all right, okay.
Samach. Somech means to lean or to rely. Okay,
so it's lismoch.
When you put your hands on someone, it's not just you less laying your hands, but it's like you're leaning on.
Lismoch.
But exactly, from relying.
Yeah, okay,
exactly.
Okay.
It's the same word.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Right. Anyway, it was great seeing. Yes, Liz, you had a comment.
The sun and moon have got different roles as well, haven't they? I mean, I'm thinking of tides. It's the moon that controls the tides of the sea. And just thinking of Moses and Joshua in their different roles.
Wow, that's great. I mean, let's digest that a little bit and see if next week. Come up with something that tells us something about Joshua from that. I love that. Right. I do like that. Great.
In some Christian churches, when a pastor or a minister retires, he cannot stay there and worship in that congregation. He has to leave and find some other place to worship because the new man coming in would be threatened.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, by the older person's presence. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
It's interesting because like in Israel, we have a parliamentary government. And, you know, like in the United States, a president is elected for one or two terms and then he's out and he's never in the neighborhood after he's out of power. In Israel, we have members of Knesset that go into power and out of power all the time. So, for example, now we have a situation with Netanyahu, who's been the prime minister for so many years. He is now out, but he's still there. He's in the Knesset and he is, you know, badgering his successor. And you can see why that's always going to be, even in a case of a smooth transition, you're always going to have someone who felt, I would have done it better, you know, and that's also part of it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, okay. Well, it was great to see you all. I'm so glad we're on a new book and looking forward to the rest of our lessons together. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks, Sondra.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that video. And we'd like to be sure you're getting all of our video content. So just click on the subscribe button below, as well as on the notification bell. And that way you will have easy access to all our material. We look forward to staying in touch with you. God bless you and have a wonderful day.